o'clock.
It's time for more 92.9 The Game tonight as we get you caught up with all things Atlanta sports and beyond.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Braves are cruising right now in the bottom of the sixth, 5-0 over the Mets in this critical series that will seemingly, unless something crazy happens, it's pretty much going to decide their postseason fate. Keep you updated on that. But we got to continue our Falcons conversation as we head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our good buddy Miles Garrett. You see him all over on Fox 5, host and reporter. He was at the game on Sunday night. Miles, appreciate the time as always.
Absolutely, Chris. Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Yep. Let's start with what we didn't see. And that was, I think, another showing from offensive coordinator Zach Robinson that left a little bit to be desired there, especially in the fourth quarter. What did you make of some of the play calls, especially on the fourth downs?
Yeah, no. So we actually spoke to Bijan Robinson postgame. He said that that was a call that kind of Kirk Cousins had some options on that fourth down play. He called that play at the line of scrimmage that outside call to Bijan Robinson. Now, obviously, hindsight is 20/20 on that call. I think some fans may have wanted him to go more north, south, and east, west on that play. But if Tyler Allgeier makes that block, there could be a different conversation. You know, you have to keep in mind that Drew Dahlman, Caleb McGarry were both out on that play. You got to take into account Chris Jones. So, you know, that play could have gone a couple of different ways. So you never really know what happens if an assignment is missed or if it's taken there. So, obviously you want to get that fourth down play, and there's a conversation about that missed pass interference, of course, on Kyle Pitts earlier in the game. So, I don't think you want to put it all on Zach Robinson. I think there is some hindsight as to what happens actually, you know, live there at the line of scrimmage. So, not the result the Falcons wanted, but I do like the aggressiveness there.
Yeah, and I think overall it was a pretty good showing against the Kansas City Chiefs, two-time defending Super Bowl champions. Of course, as we know, you kept Mahomes from throwing the deep ball for most of the game, but he became Charlie Checkdown Miles, and he sort of – it was death by a thousand cuts, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it really emphasizes the Falcons' strength, really. Just the Falcons' secondary, whether that's Jesse Bates and – A.J. Terrell and Justin Simmons. I mean, getting another interception there of Patrick Mahomes. They have the most interceptions of any active player in the NFL, and I think that's why you sign a guy like that, is to get that. And I think that's become very evident as far as the first three games is concerned for the Falcons' strengths defensively. That secondary has really shown its worth. I think that pass rush really needs to get a little bit more pressure on quarterbacks, and Matthew Judon's had a couple sacks here, but I think you want to see a little bit more out of him. Grady Jarrett's been back in the backfield, which is a very encouraging sign given his injury and coming back from that at his age. So you want to see a little bit more from there, but I think so far the secondary has really proven its worth from a financial standpoint and just from a game standpoint. They've really shown that they can win games for this defense and offense, really. I think we saw that a lot earlier last season when the defense was keeping the offense in the game and they were still trying to figure out their identity. And I think that the same thing is happening this year, just with a little bit more talent on the offensive side, obviously with Kirk Cousins and all the different weapons you really have on that side of the ball.
We know Drew Dahlman's going to hit the IR, miss at least four games, but Caleb McGarry more optimistic. Do you expect any changes from an offensive play calling or offensive scheme standpoint with a couple of guys potentially out?
You know, it's tough because I know Caleb McGarry is – his strength really is based in the run game. I think we've seen that the last couple of seasons, and specifically in the Arthur Smith scheme, he was very good in that sort of run-heavy offense and run blocking. So it's difficult to kind of assess whether or not this team will continue that strength in the run game. We've seen the strengths of both Bijan Robinson and Tyler Allgeier. I think Allgeier is more of that north and south runner, whereas Bijan Robinson, I think you can come up with some more creative designs from him. I think that's good with Zach Robinson and what his play calling could be. He had a great game against Philadelphia this past week against the Chiefs. I think there was a little bit more that you kind of wanted to see from him, but losing guys like Drew Dahlman and Caleb McGarry certainly leaves a void. I know you bring in a guy like Matt Hennessy to the practice squad. There is some familiarity there, but at the same time, I do think this won't change the identity of the offense as a whole, because I think it's very diversified in what kind of personnel you have on the offensive side of the ball with all those weapons you have. I think Kirk Cousins has gotten a lot more comfortable in this offense. I think that first week against Pittsburgh, they were shaping off a lot of rust that maybe you wanted to see get shaken off in the preseason, but that week against Philadelphia and this past week against Kansas City. I think you saw them get a little bit more comfortable in their scheme, specifically that first drive on offense. I think that's really what this offense is designed to look like. They marched right down the field against that Kansas City defense, which is a very, very good defense. I think a lot of people have a lot more invested in the Kansas City offense, but they have a lot of talent on that defensive line, and Zach Robinson's scheme really marched down the field there on that first drive, and I think that's really what this offense is designed to look like at their best fit. So hopefully you see a lot more of that against the Saints this week.
Talking all things Falcons with our good buddy Miles Garrett of Fox 5. You can watch him there in terms of all things Falcons coverage all season long. All right, Miles, when it comes to Kyle Pitts, everybody I've been talking about after this game has had some varying opinions. What have you seen from him so far through the three games? I don't want to say has he done enough. I don't know if that's the proper phrasing, but is he performing at a clip of what you expected, especially with the way he looked at camp?
So I think there is obviously some more left to see when it comes to Kyle Pitts. And frankly, from me seeing him in the preseason, whether that was training camp or whatnot, it looked like the best camp I have seen thus far from Kyle Pitts coming back from that knee injury. So you want to see him get involved in the offense a lot more. I know fans got really excited seeing him make that big 50-yard catch there against Kansas City where he kind of showed off what he can do, whether that was yards after catch, getting the ball there. I think he has a lot of talent that stretches beyond the tight end position, which is obviously what you draft a guy like that for, beyond just being a tight end. He is a weapon that you can use all over the field. And I know Zach Robinson has really emphasized that, in addition to a guy like Bijan Robinson, using him all over the field, not just in the backfield, using him in the slot out wide. I want to see a little bit more of that from Kyle Pitts. I think we are going to see that. I think Kansas City's defense, like I said earlier, is just, it's very underestimated. I think there's a lot of good looks that they offered. And I do think you can use him a lot more outside, split out wide, whether that's in the slot or at the X position, instead of just being the de facto tight end. You want to see him get involved. He's got the speed. He's got the size. You just want to see him get more involved in the offense. And I do expect to see him more in there, especially with how more comfortable I think Kirk Cousins is back there in the pocket. Now, again, we did talk about the offensive line, the losses of Drew Dahlman and Caleb McGarry may play a factor in how comfortable Kirk Cousins is there. But at the end of the day, that is a guy you want to see get more involved because you ideally want to have him as your number two option there behind Drake London in the passing game because of his talent and ability.
When you look at the New Orleans Saints coming up on Sunday at 1 o'clock, what is your bigger concern for the Falcons? Is it containing what was, until week three, the most explosive offense through 2 weeks some of us have ever seen? Or is it the old faithful in Cam Jordan and DeMario Davis and company wrecking games as they have for many, many years for the Saints?
Well, that'll obviously be a concern. Especially with Kirk Cousins' I'll call it pending health, because I don't think he's had a lot of pressure outside of that week one game against Pittsburgh when you were facing a guy like T.J. Watt, who is arguably the best pass rusher in the league and probably, you could say arguably this generation. So Cam Jordan, of course, wreaked havoc on the Falcons in the past, and they're very familiar with his game. But I think the key storyline in beating the Saints is getting pressure on Derek Carr, because he's been fantastic at least the first 2 weeks of the season, as you said. He kind of ran into a block there against Philadelphia, a team that the Falcons beat and had a lot of success against as far as making Jalen Hurts maybe feel a little bit more uncomfortable than he's used to feeling. So I think that's key. Obviously, you want to stop Alvin Kamara. He's been another threat there in the backfield. Maybe, you want to slow him down. I know you could argue that maybe there was a conversation that he would slow down a little bit with the absence of Michael Thomas, but Chris Olave has definitely taken up the slack there, and they're still dangerous. I know that was preseason. You thought that maybe they weren't going to be as big of a threat, but they have certainly been that, right up there with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So you want to make Derek Carr feel uncomfortable. He's had a little bit of a renaissance this year, I think you could say. So that's always a storyline, right? You want to see more pressure on the quarterback. That's something the Falcons have struggled with a bit this year. You want to create more pressures. Matthew Judon hasn't been quite what you've hoped for just yet, but I expect him to pick up the slack a little bit as the season continues.
when you talk about the overall vibe and the mood, it seems like Raheem Morris has done a good job sort of not getting too high, not getting too low after wins and losses this season. What type of week do you expect up at Flowery Branch in terms of the practice, the intensity, and making sure that they get things back to where they need to be?
Yeah, I mean, I'm expecting to see a lot of the same. You know, Raheem Morris, he's kind of kept a even head. And Matt Ryan even mentioned this as well, just as far as how the schedule really lays out for this team. A lot of their schedule, I guess, per se, is very top-heavy when it comes to competition-wise. You know, like I said earlier, New Orleans and Tampa Bay, you weren't expecting, at least preseason, to be as good as they've been this season. But I think those are two very winnable games from what we've seen thus far. And after that, I think it's a relatively easy slate. But going back to your question as far as how practice is concerned, look, Raheem Morris is very much a player's head coach. He very much keeps an even keel as far as not getting too high, not getting too low after wins and losses. It was very much the same reaction after the loss against Pittsburgh and after the win against Philadelphia. You know, you don't want to get too high or too low after that. And I think he's going to probably keep the same mentality this week after losing to the Kansas City Chiefs, which was a game, frankly, that, you know, could have gone either way, whether that was making that fourth down play or, you know, a couple other plays that could have gone your way there in the fourth quarter.
All right, before I let you go, we got a big one on Saturday as well. What are you thinking about Georgia's chances to go to their house, and you know who they is, and do something special against Bama?
Oh, gosh, man. It's a game that you're really going to figure out a lot about both teams, I think, Chris, because Alabama, you know, you get a big win there earlier this season, but Kalen DeBoer has not been tested yet as far as top-tier SEC competition. We all know what Nick Saban was able to do with Alabama. They were the dynasty. You're all presuming that Georgia is going to take up that mantelpiece and be the next dynasty in college football. But Georgia obviously did struggle against Kentucky. That is a team that has played Georgia very well, especially at their house in the past. I don't think they've given up more than 14 or 16 points at Kentucky the past 4 years they played them there in Lexington. But at the same time, this is a very winnable game for Georgia. You know, they've shown that they can be right up there and beat Alabama, or at least keep it close. So I think it'll be very telling for both teams going forward. And I don't think it'll eliminate either team from playoff competition with this new 12-team format. But look, Jalen Milroe has been very, very good. He's been as good as advertised in years past, and Alabama certainly isn't going anywhere. But you're right. I mean, it's a huge game. It'll be very big as far as implications for the rest of the season. And I expect Georgia to be very big in the run game this week. I think that getting guys like, you know, not Dejon Edwards, we're already used to seeing him.
Yeah,
but
Trevor Etienne, you know, and company. Yeah.
Trevor Etienne, yeah, I'm used to seeing all these other different backs back there. But Georgia is obviously very, very deep back there, and I think that they'll – I expect them to win. I'll put that out there. Just given the depth and the coaching experience of Kirby Smart and the big game experience that both of them have, I think Georgia has the advantage here.
All right, Miles Garrett, Fox 5. Make sure you check him out for his Falcons. And quite frankly, every other, you know, Braves, big series, dogs, he's got it covered for you at Fox 5. Miles, appreciate the time as always.
Absolutely, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Miles Garrett there from Fox 5. Braves still up 5, but they let up 1. That's okay. Schwellenbach was still phenomenal again tonight. He's going to be big for them as this stretch run continues. When we get back, let's have some fun, a little PM power rankings, two lists, top 5, one sports, one non-sports. I'll tell you what they are next. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app.
Now it's hiding somewhere in the darkness waiting for nightfall.
It's live sports talk in the ATL at night. This is 92.9 The Game tonight.
On Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
Fast-moving show here on a Tuesday evening because there's a heck of a lot to talk about on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Braves up 5-1, top of the eighth, looking good here. Joe Jimenez on. Let's see if he can keep things where they need to be. Braves and Mets for a huge three-game set. Then they get KC to close out the season. UGA and Bama on Saturday. We got into that a little bit right there at the end with our buddy Miles Garrett from Fox 5. And then, of course, a little football game happening on Sunday afternoon at the Benz, huh? Those guys coming to town. Stinky town, as John Fricke likes to say. I won't do the thing where I cover my mouth and say Saints because that's his thing, and we'll certainly let him have that. But been a lot of fun talking all things ATL sports with you tonight. And we will continue to do so as we get into some power rankings.
It's time for the PM Power Rankings on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Now, if you don't know how this works by now, I don't know what to tell you. But just in case, a little quickie recap. Two topics. One sports, one non-sports. Top five lists. I have mine. Dom has his. I always let the producer pick. Dom, sports or non-sports first?
We'll do sports. Let's go sports.
All right, let's go sports first. And we did this last week, and it worked really well. So let's do it again this week because there's a lot of change. Your top five NFL teams after week three. Now, I'll tell you what. Two of my teams from week two are no longer on the list. So we shall see who is there. And then our top five non-Disney animated movies. The girlfriend and I this weekend are going to see Howl's Moving Castle.
Fantastic.
By Miyazaki. They are putting it back in theaters, and we're going to go see that, and he is one of my favorites. So I was thinking, what's our top five non-Disney animated movies? All right, top five NFL teams after week three. Number five, Kansas City. They got to be in there. They're 3-0. They're the two-time defending champs. Well, great. I mean, the Falcons could have beaten them.
Yeah.
And they could have lost to the Bengals, too. So I think they're a little lucky right now. The offense certainly isn't clicking on all cylinders. Carson Steele was a revelation for them, but I don't know if that's a sustainable formula for me. They're missing Hollywood Brown. They're missing Isaiah Pacheco. So they're still in the top five, but they're number five.
I'm not mad at that. Not mad at it. I have the Chiefs higher. I'll say that.
Okay.
For my fifth spot, I have the Seattle Seahawks.
Interesting.
At number five. I think that they look like a complete team right now. Their defense has played well. Obviously, Geno Smith has had a career resurgence, and it just continues in Seattle. DK Metcalf, I think, is like a top five wide receiver. It's just because he plays in Seattle, he doesn't get the recognition. That team looks really good right now.
Well, they're the best team in their division right now, which who would have had that on their bingo card? And for that exact reason, they're my number four.
Oh, okay. Look at us. Look at us. Not too bad. Not too bad. Not too far off. My number four here is a team that is not undefeated. Had one bad loss, but I think that loss is just one that you bury, chalk it up to a bad night. I have at four the Houston Texans. I'm a believer in C.J. Stroud. I think that team is young. They are only going to get better. Like I said, you lost a game to the Minnesota Vikings, who they are playing out of their mind right now. Sam Darnold is. So I think that's a game where that's not really indicative of who they are. I think they get better moving forward. I still think they're a damn good team.
They were bumped off of my top five.
Okay, not mad at it.
I think they got exposed a little bit. Because let's be honest. It's been nothing but praise over there. And deservedly so.
It has.
But they're not, they haven't done anything yet. And CJ Stroud's still a young quarterback. And I think that, you know, he's going to have to find his way to overcome some adversity now. He got punched in the face for the first time, really, in his NFL career. My number three, you'll be happy about this, Dom, are the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Hey!
I probably wouldn't have put him this high, but it's Mike Tomlin, it's TJ Watt. It's not really about Justin Fields at all, to be honest. I just trust them. I just trust that Mike Tomlin, if the defense is going to be this good and you have Mike Tomlin as your head coach, I mean, why not? And that division's been very subpar.
Yeah.
So it's eminently winnable. Why not? Steelers number three.
I love it. Funny enough, the Steelers are actually not in my top five, solely because I want to see more out of the offense. I think the defense is the best defense in the league right now. They're absolutely elite. I want them to be more complete. I think the offense is getting there. I don't think they're there quite yet, but I am happy with what I'm seeing. At three for me is the team that I mentioned not too long ago that beat the Texans, and that is the Minnesota Vikings. Sam Darnold, early on, right now, is in MVP conversation. I don't think anyone expected that. I don't think anyone expected Minnesota to look this good. Granted, when you have Justin Jefferson makes a lot of people look good, but it's not just Justin Jefferson. Sam is playing, let me say that again. Sam is playing very well. I like what I'm seeing out of Minnesota, and it just seems like they're consistent. Kevin O'Connell is doing a fantastic job scheming up that offense. I like what I'm seeing out of Minnesota.
All right, my number two, Buffalo Bills. Did not think I'd be saying that at all this season.
I thought
they were going to be able to have a representative season, but I thought they were going to finish third in their division, to be honest.
Yeah.
And Josh Allen, you want to talk about MVP?
Man.
I mean, he's every bit as good as he ever was, and he's not falling off anytime soon. Stephon Diggs or no Stephon Diggs. So, Buffalo, I mean, I think their defense still has some cracks in it, but maybe they'll continue to prove me wrong. To me, they're number two.
Yeah, I got them at number two as well. I think Josh Allen is showing that it wasn't just the talent around him. I think he's showing that he's the type of guy that can take a franchise and actually elevate it, and not just a matter of, oh, well, he's good, but like he had a ton of good guys around him, so that's why the numbers were nice. No, the Buffalo Bills go as Josh Allen goes, and he is one of the three or four best quarterbacks in the NFL. Like I said, he's my early pick right now as the MVP. The way they just dismantled the Jaguars the other night was insane.
Who might be the biggest disappointment in the NFL so far.
Absolutely.
Outside of Cincinnati. All right, my number one, the Minnesota Vikings. It's because I think it's legit. I don't think they're going to lose their next four in a row. I love what I've seen out of the offense, obviously, as you just talked about, but it's the defense for me.
Yeah.
That's surprisingly, I mean, maybe we shouldn't be surprised because it's Brian Flores, and despite all the rumors about what happened in Miami.
Listen, he doesn't do well with quarterbacks, but he knows a damn thing about defense.
Yeah, he's a really good defensive coordinator, and I think the Vikings are, you know, especially with the injuries to Jordan Love in the division and the Lions underperforming. Hey. Mm-hmm.
Here's my only thing about the Vikings. You remember when Sam Darnold was in Carolina and they got off to a nice 3-0 start, and we said kind of were like, oh man, look at Carolina. Sam Darnold, is this like what? And then Sam Darnold started to look like Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
I have him in my top five.
Carolina's defense was not as good as this.
Absolutely. That's true. The team around him, but I'm still, after seeing so much bad from Sam Darnold, I love it for him that he's getting here with these first three. I still just want to see it a little bit further before I put them at one. At one for me, I have the Kansas City Chiefs, and it's
really?
Probably going to...
Okay.
Yeah, I'm at that point with the Chiefs where you have to beat them. Someone is going to have to prove to me that they're better than the Chiefs. No one has done it so far this season. I'm just at that point with them. I'm not betting against Mahomes. I'm not betting against Kelsey. I'm not betting against Andy Reid or Spagnuolo. That defense is sick. Xavier Worthy, once they really start working him in, I think is going to unlock that offense even more.
He didn't do anything against them.
Yeah, he had his coming out game, sort of, in week one, and then has kind of been quiet. Also, they're without Hollywood Brown still. So, I think, though, as long as they have Mahomes, they're the best team in the NFL.
Halfway through our PM Power rankings here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, we just did our top five NFL teams after week three. Moving on to our top five non-Disney animated films. Again, I got this inspiration from me and the girlfriend are going to see Howl's Moving Castle this weekend, and that is a Miyazaki joint, and that is one of my favorites. My number five, it's not because I love it so much, but more so because it just needs to get respected. There have been countless spin-offs, sequels, made-for-TV movies, rides at theme parks. This guy has been the face of DreamWorks Animation for about 15, 20 years now, and that is Shrek.
Mm.
That is my number five.
You know, it's funny, Shrek was my honorable mention. Shrek just missed my list. At number five is a movie from my childhood that I always loved, and I don't know how many people will remember it or know it, but it's a movie called The Pagemaster. It's Macaulay Culkin when he was younger. It starts off as live action, and he's a kid that goes to a library, but like ends up getting sucked into all of the books and stories. So like it goes animated from there. So like he's working his way through like Jekyll and Hyde and all these other like classic stories and stuff. Really cool movie that I always loved when I was a kid.
I'm not familiar. I'll have to look that up. I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, it's called
one.
The Pagemaster.
My number four is a classic, really like ahead of its time in terms of storytelling, in terms of animation, in terms of just like this movie. The best way I can describe it is this movie just has so much heart. Like, you'll maybe have a tearjerker at the end of it. It's so good. It's The Iron Giant, my number four.
The Iron Giant is great. One of the strangest names, one of the most just god-awful names you could give a child, Hogarth. Like, Mom, what were you doing?
Yeah, that's true. It sounds like straight out of Harry Potter.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. At number four, I went with another classic, and I went with Ice Age. Love that movie. How do you not love Manny, Sid, Diego, and of course, Scrat, everyone's favorite squirrel rat type thing that just loves his acorns.
Yeah, once again, we are on the same page. Ice Age is my number three.
Hey!
Obviously, the cast, you get Ray Romano and John Leguizamo, and you get Dennis Miller, and you get all the, or Dennis Leary, rather, and you get all the greats, and then Queen Latifah comes in the later series. And what's iconic about this to me, and I'll never forget it, was the initial preview when it came out, when Scrat was climbing up the iceberg, trying to get the acorn. No one had any idea what was going on. That, like, 3D style of animation was just breaking onto the scene. And, it's just an all-time classic.
At number three for me, I have a movie called The Fantastic Mr. Fox. It was by Wes Anderson. It's a kind of claymation style stop-motion movie. I absolutely love it. George Clooney voices the main character. Hilarious, very dry humor stuff, which is right up my alley. Basically about this fox that gets into this battle with this with these farmers about stealing food from them and stuff. But it's a hilarious movie.
I've really heard of that one. I didn't know what it was about or even that George Clooney was in it. So
yeah,
that's really interesting.
Very
I'll have to check that one out. My number two, Into the Spider-Verse. Absolutely love it. It's perfect for kids. It's perfect for adults. It has lore. It has sci-fi. It has adventure, an all-star cast. My buddy Nick from New Girl is playing the adult Spider-Man. Uh-huh. I absolutely love it. Mm-hmm. And it's just so well done. The sequel, not as good, but Into the Spider-Verse gets an A-plus for me.
Yes, I was going to say, we are on the same page here. Spider-Verse is number two on my list. I love the second one as well, though. I kind of lump both of them together. I cannot wait for the third one. Or basically, it's going to be the second movie, part two type deal. But anyway, again, great animation. Love the story. Huge fan of just seeing a different, like, we've seen so much Peter Parker. I love that we get to see Miles Morales more and he's getting his flowers as a character. But yeah, just all in all, fantastic story about kind of coming into your own, a little bit of a kind of, you know, coming of age movies type deal and stuff like that. Finding confidence. It was great.
All right, my number one, we're going to start or end where we started with Miyazaki. It's probably my favorite movie of all time, and it's Spirited Away. It is absolutely fantastic. It's, I don't care if you're two or if you're 200, this movie's for you. An absolutely heart-wrenching story about, speaking of coming of age, mm-hmm. of a young girl dealing with her family issues and dealing with becoming more mature as she travels through the spiritual realm and deals with all sorts of shenanigans from learning how to clean and cook and dealing with all these spirits that interact with her in a very, very unique way. Don't want to give away too much of the plot if you haven't seen it. Please, if you like my sports takes and you trust my movie takes, take your wife or your significant other, go see Spirited Away, an absolutely beautiful, beautiful film, my favorite.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's number one on my list as well. It is probably my favorite animated movie of all time. I remember telling my dad about this hundreds of times, like, you have to go watch it. And it's another movie that they actually put in theaters pretty often. They put it back in. So if you haven't seen it, absolutely go check it out. If you're a big Hercules fan, like the animated Hercules movie, the voice actress for Meg is in it as well. But no, awesome story. Ton of fun animation, really great stuff. I mean, you and I both love anime movies and stuff, so I know some people may not be your thing, but give other cultures a try. You will be amazed at what you find.
And also, Jason Marsden plays the male protagonist as well, and you'll recognize that voice the second you hear it. He's been in a million things. All right, great job on the PM Power Rankings. When we get back, I'll give you an update on the Braves and Mets, and we'll wrap this thing up. What did Raheem Morris have to say about this loss? You want to hear that next as we close up shop. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
You've been keeping me up all night with this.
Back to more 92.9 The Game tonight.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Last chance for romance here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And it is quite a romantic evening at Truist Park. Truist Park, I should say. tongue-tied because the Braves just did something they haven't done all season long. A dominant win where the bats got hot, starting pitching was great, and Rossell Iglesias continues to be the best closer in baseball. He is phenomenal. You know, Dom, it's funny. We were talking about, like, old-school sports stuff before where, like, the web gems. If they still had the Rolaids Relief Man of the Year, I think it would go to Rysel Iglesias. Yeah. He has been absolutely nothing short of phenomenal. And, frankly, you needed this win. You need them all against the Mets if you can get them. But you certainly keep yourself in position now to be in the playoff chase. And listen, if you lost this game tonight, it wouldn't have sunk you entirely, but the path to the playoffs would have been minuscule at best. But now with this win, sets up a huge matchup tomorrow. Chris Sale, who else would you want? Not only for the Braves, but all of baseball. He's been baseball's best pitcher all season long. He's going to go for his 19th win tomorrow, and just another notch closer to wrapping up that Cy Young Award. So Braves with an excellent, excellent performance tonight. Shout out to Money Harris for continuing to be red hot, making a great play in the field. Ozuna with a home run. Everybody doing their part down the stretch. Ozzy's been back, and he's been doing his thing. So a really, really, really impressive and necessary performance as the Braves take game one of this all-important series from the Mets 5-1. All right, with a couple minutes left, I want you to hear a couple more things from the Atlanta Falcons after their 22-17 loss. Been covering it all night, pillar to post. So let's end where we started. First off, Raheem Morris talking about an opportunity to win this game, and it slipped through the cracks.
You know, we got to run the ball better on offense. We got to be able to stop the run better on defense. And there's a lot of things you can clean up, and there's no such thing as really going to play a guy and feeling good about it unless you win. And you had an opportunity to win that game, and we didn't. Came up short.
Yeah, I mean, there's no sympathy points, but at the same time, I wasn't looking for a moral victory here, but I don't think anybody predicted this to be a win for the Falcons when the schedule came out. So to make it a close game, especially after coming off of that win versus Philly, I think you can still feel good. We spent a lot of time tonight taking your calls. We took a ton of calls in the 7 p.m. hour, as we often do, talking about the topic du jour, which was, how did you feel, or how do you feel now, removed from that game? Are you positive because they kept it close against the standard, the gold standard team in the National Football League, or did you feel like some of their biggest holes got exposed and you're feeling more negative, which was third downs? I think they're 5-26 on the season, which is unacceptable. You had two chances in the fourth quarter to get a first down. Didn't do it. And then Zach Robinson, he continues to sort of be the ire of Falcons Nation right now, because I think there's just a lot of uneasiness about his initial debut so far as a play caller and as a scheme creator and what exactly the identity of this Falcons offense is going to be. Next up from Raheem, they were talking about losing the starting offensive lineman and how that affected them.
You know, that doesn't matter. Nobody cares. We won't make those excuses. The next guy in, I got a lot of faith in, I got a lot of belief in, and it's our job to go out there and execute and win.
Yeah, and it looks like they're – well, it doesn't look like they are going to be without center Drew Dolman for at least the next four games. He was put on IR with a high ankle sprain. Good news is that Caleb McGarry could be back, and he's been playing much better before he went out with a – I believe it was an MCL sprain, but that could only sideline him for a few days. We'll see. Joe Patrick said he'd be surprised if he went out there this week, and they gave him a little extra time to rest, but then that means Storm Norton. It's your time, bud. You got to shine. You got to do better than you did last week. One more from Raheem here. Actually, a couple more from Raheem here as we are closing up shop on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Raheem said he won't second guess the fourth and inches call. KC just made the play.
You know, we went with the fourth and one. We went with and the third and one up the middle. We had an outside play with these guys doing the zero pushes. If we can get that thing blocked, we can get around that corner and big things can be happening. But we didn't. So we didn't get that executed. I won't second guess the call. You know, they made a great play.
I'm going to second guess the call. I mean, I'm sorry. I know Raheem's not going to throw his quarterback and his OC under the bus, and he, frankly, he shouldn't, but it wasn't a good call. I don't care if Kirk checked into it. I don't care if Zach checked out of it. I don't care what the situation was. You should not be – when you have the offensive line that the Falcons have, even minus center and right tackle, when you still have Lindstrom and Bergeron and Jake Matthews, you better move the ball forward. Don't move it sideways. Don't run a gadget play. I know they ran an end around last week from Bijan on a 4th-and-1. I still don't even really want to see that, if I'm being honest. Just run the damn ball. Run behind Chris Lindstrom. Just run behind him. He's the best at what he does in the NFL. I trust him to create a hole to get a yard. Why is it so complicated? Don't get too cute. Don't make it something it doesn't need to be. I just feel like there's been a few times early on this season. I don't know if you're trying too hard, bro. I don't know if you're trying to make a name for yourself. I don't know if you're trying to implement that this is a multifaceted offense, that you have to account for all these things at all these different times. Whatever the case may be, don't be cute.
Yeah, I was going to say, in the two losses that you've had this year, it's been because you've gotten away from what your identity is supposed to be. Like in the game against the Steelers, you're in pistol the entire game. That's not what this offense was supposed to be. In that moment against the Chiefs, you're supposed to just run the ball. That's what this offensive line was built to do. That's what you drafted Bijan Robinson for. Run the ball north and south. It's nice that Bijan is shifty and can do all that stuff, but when you have Bijan Robinson and Tyler Allgeier behind that line, run through somebody's face.
Well, that's what I was about to say. Even if you don't use Bijan, you have Tyler Allgeier, who's the ultimate goal line 4th-and-inches back. He runs over people. That's what he does. Like, that's why it's frustrating. Because you feel like everything's there. And I think that's what the callers who called in tonight have been saying, that like everything's, all the ingredients are there. Just got to turn the pot on and cook it. But the gaslight's been tweaking on him, and the flame hasn't been consistent, and
yeah.
And the goods are just not being. There's a lot of raw material still in the pot.
You ever had one of those stoves where the burner didn't quite work, and only the gas came out? So like you had to manually light it. You had to get one of the little
light,
and you had to come in.
You got to pull away.
That's
really
what we need.
Fast.
We're just waiting for Zach to do that. It's clicking, but it hasn't caught fire yet.
Yeah, and I don't know if the Saints and the Bucks back-to-back are the best remedy to get it to click, especially what they've looked like for 4 out of the 6 games that they've played combined. But that's the challenge that, hey, if you're going to be an OC on one of what is supposed to be the top offenses in the league, you got to show up, buddy. I don't care. Nobody, as Raheem just said in that cut, right, nobody gives a blank that you're a rookie play caller as an OC. Nobody cares. Just get it done. You have a quarterback back there who's been in the league for 15 years. He knows what he's doing. Rely on him. Use him. Although I guess that didn't work too well on that 4th-and-1 call. If he did check into a play that ultimately didn't work. But at the same time, you know what I'm saying. You have Kirk there. You have all those weapons. You have Kyle. You have Drake. You have Bijan. You have Darnell, who's had a great start to the season. I mean, use them. Use those guys to your advantage. Don't make it hard. Like, hey, Zach, Raheem. Football's hard, guys. Don't make it harder on yourself. It's hard enough when everything's perfect. You make it a lot harder on yourself when you're fighting on 4th-and-1 and you're running outside zone. You got Chris Lindstrom and Jake Matthews out there. Just say, boys, giddy up. We're moving this train right behind your big behinds, gentlemen. That's all you got to do. All right. That'll do it for this edition of the other. Oh, I almost said Other Side of the Glass. That'll be on Saturdays. This is 92.9 The Game tonight. Other Side of the Glass, if you don't know, is my weekend show here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. But this little doohickey was Sports Radio 92.9 The Game tonight. Big thanks to Dom for filling in. Great job on the 6-pack and on the PM Power Rankings tonight, where we both had the same number one non-Disney animated movie of all time, Spirited Away. Again, if you don't know what I'm talking about, go check it out. See it with your family. See it with your kids. See it with your significant other. It is an absolutely beautiful movie from the legendary Miyazaki out of Japan. Big thanks to my guests as well, Joe Patrick. We had Pete Hoffman. We had Miles Garrett. We had you covered all the way through the Falcons, both wrapping up the week from the Chiefs and previewing the Saints. Braves get a big win, 5-1, and we got UGA and Bama coming up primetime on Saturday. That'll do it for me. I'm Chris Thomas. Give me a follow on socials if you don't already, at C Thomas Radio, and we can chat all things ATL sports. Talk to you again soon. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app.